Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
You're listening to Voices of Your Village, and in this episode, I got to hang out with our very own Rachel Lounder to chat about transitioning from 1 to 2 kids. We chatted about our own personal journeys and different things we hear from the outside world about, oh, what second kids are supposed to be like and all that jazz. We talked about triggers, things that worked for us, things that didn't. And we had very different experiences. My secondborn has similar sensory systems to her firstborn, and then vice versa for her secondborn has similar sensory systems to my firstborn. And so we got to chat about what that looked like and how it showed up and how it affected our transitions from 1 to 2. I would love to hear your stories and what your transitions have looked like, or what you're thinking about. Maybe you're pregnant or in the process of transitioning from 1 to 2 kids or adding a child to your family. What are you nervous about? What are you excited about? What questions do you have? Come on over to Instagram and let's chat. We have a post that'll go up for this episode, and I want to continue the conversation there. So come on over to seed.and.so and let's chat. If you are finding value in this podcast, if it's helping you on your journey, please take a minute to rate and leave a review. I love reading the reviews. I love hearing like what resonates with you and how this is hitting home for you. And it's huge for the podcast world. It helps other folks find our podcast so that we can continue to serve more and more humans who would like to raise emotionally intelligent kids. All right, folks, let's dive in.
Hey there, I'm Alyssa Blass Campbell. I'm a mom with a master's degree in early childhood education and co-creator of the Collaborative Emotion Processing Method. I'm here to walk alongside you through the messy, vulnerable parts of being humans raising other humans with deep thoughts and actionable tips. Let's dive in together.
I feel like today's such an appropriate topic, the transition to 2 kids, because we just had like a really family filled weekend where we weren't like, I mean, we had a snowstorm, so we were like hunkered down. No one was running errands, no one was doing stuff. And we had both adults. And I was like, oh, this is so nice. Two kids is so nice when there's 2 adults.
Yeah, that ratio matters for sure.
Oh man, it's a game changer. Sometimes one of my best friends will bring her 2 girls over just so that we can like even out some ratio.
Yeah.
I'm like, we need some more adult hands on these kids, and she needs to be able to tap out sometimes. Oh, the ratio matters.
Yeah, it does.
I was a little triggered by something this morning, and I was like, I've been this person, which is probably why it's triggering, where I was on Instagram and someone that I follow who has 1 kid and 2 adults most of the time. And they went to like an airplane trip, and she like very often like shares how they're doing what they're doing. And like, do you want to hear how like we had a smooth plane ride? And my like gut was like, yeah, you got 2 adults to 1 kid. That's how you had a smooth plane ride.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. Like, and I was like, Alyssa,
but that reaction is so real. And I think like it's okay for somebody with 1 child to share about how their smooth plane ride went. And it's also okay for parents who are having a different adult to child ratio to be like, that's so great for you. And that's not my truth right now.
Yeah, I think that's it, right? It's like, that's not my truth. It's, I think the idea of like, if you do these things, then yours will be smooth too. And it's like, just no, logistically, no.
And also like, a child's nervous system is going to be a variable there too for how smooth things go. So like beyond ratios, kids are different. And so you can't be like, do X, Y, and Z for a smooth plane ride, because that might work for a kid with a certain nervous system and would be a disaster for a kid with a different nervous system.
100%. I think back to like, if Mila had been my first, she's not sensory sensitive. If I would have shared all the things, like, look, just do this and she'll sleep in a restaurant and she'll whatever. And then had Sage, who like never would do those things. He's sensory sensitive, especially sound and light. And I would have been like, oh my gosh, Alyssa, you're the most annoying human, because it was just like, that's who she is.
Right. I always call Abel my humble pie child, because Nora was not a sensory sensitive child. She would sleep on the go. A lot of things about our life stayed the same after we had Nora, because her needs were very convenient to meet. If she like was able to nurse, like she was good to go for anything. And she's still kind of like that, very laid back. And then Abel had a ton of needs that were not convenient to meet, and he couldn't be in a loud or bright environment ever. So yeah, it's easy for me to be like, oh yeah, my baby sleeps anywhere, my first child. And then I had Abel and I was like, oh wow, like this can be so different.
I think this is going to be a fun part about chatting today, because we have opposite in terms of like, my first was sensory sensitive, your second was, my second isn't, your first wasn't. And just to see how that plays out. Also, your first loves connection and like that fuels her and has been like chatty and engaged in what her whole life. I feel like she started talking and hasn't stopped. And I also feel like that's what we're walking into with Mila, who just, you hear her in team meetings. Just totally. The chattiest human, am I included? Just this weekend when we had our cozy family weekend, Zach and Sage were in the other room and I was just hanging out with Mila in the living room, and all of a sudden she's just like throwing her head to the side and she's like getting fussy. I was like, what is going on? And then I picked her up and I walk in and I realized she just wanted to be where they were. She was like, I hear them. I don't feel included. What's going on? Like, you are not even 4 months old.
That social battery that like constantly needs that connection point, like that's Nora for sure. And I definitely see it with Mila.
Yeah, it's, and it'll be its own brand of exhausting. But in infancy, I feel like it definitely has shifted to have her as our number two. So just to chat specifically with you about this topic today.
Yeah.
When you went from Nora, laid back, pretty, just not sensory sensitive, really is key for infancy in terms of like, how hard is this? And when you had her and then shifted and had Abe's, Nora was what, four?
Yeah.
What, I mean, right out the gates is a real rocky road for you. Looking back, what would you share with someone who's like in those shoes where their first was not sensory sensitive and their second is, and they go from like, yeah, I didn't have to really tweak things, / I thought I had this kind of figured out.
Yeah. And I think I went into it being like, okay, I've done this before. Everything should be fine. And I truly did not know that babies could come into the world and be so overwhelmed by things that we don't typically think of as stressors, such as a sibling talking or a TV being played in the background or the feeling of being strapped into a car seat. So all of these things that I was just like, yeah, it's fine. Like babies just sleep when they need to sleep and like, it'll be fine. And then he came out and he communicated right off the bat, like, no, these things are not fine for me.
This is not fine. This is not fine, Mom.
No, this is literally my nightmare and I need help. And so I think like a couple of things, right? There was the feeling initially like I was failing both kids because their needs felt like they were in opposition to each other. Nora needed connection. She needed reassurance that even though our family had changed, my love for her hadn't changed and wouldn't change, and that I was still available to connect with her. And Abel needed me to bring him into a dark, quiet space and nurse him and move his body so that he could fall asleep. And I couldn't do both of those things at once. So I
and
think
Nora
I
was in school, or was she?
No, Nora was home full time. That's not true. Nora was in a preschool program for 2 hours on Tuesday mornings and Thursday mornings.
So she was mostly home full time.
She was mostly home, and getting her there was a nightmare because Abel didn't tolerate the car.
Yeah.
So I would say it was actually not helpful at all, maybe even the opposite, but she was already in it and I wanted to maintain that routine for her. Right. Sure. So I think that I wish that I had had the perspective to let go of some of the guilt that I felt in that season of our life. And also, I truly felt like Abel was never going to be a happy baby. I also had postpartum depression, but I truly was like, this is my life now, bouncing in a dark room, and I can't help my baby. I can't soothe him until I learned more about his nervous system. So I think that perspective of like, when it's really hard in the beginning, it does change. There are ways to meet their needs, and it's not going to look like it did before, but it's totally possible. I think that's what I would have wanted to tell myself.
When you're in it, it does feel like this is forever. And what have I done to my family? And like, is this just my new normal where I'm now sitting in a dark room all the time and I don't get to go connect with that older human either? Right. I found like, just in the transition to two, and I'll chat about how different mine has been simply from their sensory systems, that there were times where it was like, Mila needs me to stay alive. Like, right. She needs to eat, she needs to sleep. And he needs me to similarly, like, let him know, I'm still here, I still love you. Some things are different about our family, some things are the same. And there were times where I felt like, oh, all I want to do is be able to meet her needs. Like, I wish someone else could meet this need for him from me. And then there were times where vice versa, I was like, all I want to do is go meet his needs. And I have to be here feeding her, right? Like, just that pull between two kids that feels like, at least at the beginning, especially for me, felt like I couldn't meet both. I had to pick, like, whose needs am I going to meet now?
Right. It's triage. Who needs me first?
And then myself is somewhere in there eventually. Right. Like,
right.
Oh, man. Yeah. So that was definitely a feeling for me of like guilt that I wish I could just, and we're still so early in it, but looking back to like that first month, especially, I wish I could just be like, yeah, listen, it's going to get easier. Like we also had her, and then he was 2 weeks later home for 17 days for like Christmas, New Year's, whatever.
Right.
Which was hard. He was out of his routine and all that jazz. Cause that's something I'm really grateful for, is he has school. So I get these like little pockets where I have just time with her, and also he's had the routine and consistency of that staying the same as home changed.
Yeah, which is so rad for him.
So rad. He's a really routine human. Like, he, you know, there are some kids who, if you tell them something too far in advance, they feel anxious and they can't stop thinking about it. And he's the opposite, where like, once we know something, we will let him know, because he will take it in. He'll think about it. He'll ask questions. He does not like to be caught off guard by something.
Totally. I remember when I was there when Mila was born, and Zach had put Sage to bed, and we were kind of just like hanging out in the kitchen, looking at the monitor. And I'm like, he's still singing in there. Like, when does he usually fall asleep? And Zach was like, yeah, he processes his day in bed. So he's thinking about and talking to himself about what he's experienced. And I've noticed that about Sage. He likes to have time to process and absorb. So it makes sense to me that school was so helpful for him.
Yeah, exactly. And to like, know, okay, that's coming, and I know what to expect from that.
Correct.
That routine piece. That's, I think, when we're looking at that transition from one to two, being able to identify, we wrote about this in Tiny Humans, Big Emotions in chapter 12. We talked about, as much as possible, prepping older siblings for what's going to be the same and what's going to be different in whatever ways we can. Like, here's what's going to be the same. We are all going to live in this house. You're going to sleep in your crib still, or like even little things like that, that you can name that will be the same. And then, because for them, especially if they're really young, they don't know what else is changing. Are you still going to be my adult? Are you going to take care of me? Am I going to be fed? Do I still have a place to sleep? Right? Like all those basic needs can feel like, are these in flux too?
Right. Totally.
And so letting them know that, which we just like try to, I mean, as much as possible, you don't know like who's this kid going to be and whatever. And I erred on the side of like letting him know as much in advance of what would be different about ways that I could interact. Like, I am going to need to lay in bed for a little while. Actually, like 3 weeks before she was born, Sage and I both got COVID and we just like laid for a couple days. We both felt like crap. And it was kind of helpful to pull that in. I was like, remember when we were feeling sick at Thanksgiving and our bodies didn't want to do anything and they needed to rest to feel better. And we laid and we watched movies. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, that might happen when Mila comes out. My body needs to heal and it's going to have to rest and lay. And here's what you can do. Like, you can come lay. Here's what you can do to interact with me and to interact with her.
Right. And here's how you can expect to connect with me during mm-hmm. this time.
Yeah. And like, I won't be able to lift you in your crib and do bedtime, but I can read books with you and then Dada can take you in, you know, like finding little ways that not just what is different and what he can't do or what I can't do, but also here's what I can do and here's what's the same.
Right. Yeah. And can you speak to like routine changes prior to the baby that can be helpful? So like for us, Cody took over Nora's bedtime
same
while I was still pregnant.
Yeah, same. First of all, I just didn't want to do it, to be honest, at that point. Like, it's so uncomfortable, so huge. I'm like, can I put him in this crib without just like dropping him from the top down? I had asked Francesca, one of my friends here, I was like, when you're going back, what is something that you would shift and do differently? And she was like, I wish that I would have stopped doing her oldest's bedtime while I was pregnant, because all of a sudden it was like, oh, now we're making that change too. And I was like, cool, noted, can do'sville. And so we started that at some point in pregnancy where Zach just like I was still a part of it and around, but then I would step out and Zach would finish bedtime with CG. And yeah, it just became like their thing. So it's just one last thing that changes.
Totally.
When she came, I found for myself, because I know he does so well with what to expect and the predictability, like when to start to prep him for the unknown of birth. Where I was like, when do I start letting him know, knowing my body? I was like, probably not before 40 weeks, to be honest. Right. But they're like, yeah, it could happen at any point. And that he would just like on a whim, someone else would pick him up from school, or he might be waking up in the middle of the night and going to Nana's or whatever. That right. part for me, I had a hard time figuring out like when's the right time to prep. I started doing it about a week before she was born, about my due date, where I was just like, hey, bud. And I related it to him. I related so much to him. We still do. And of like, you know what? We were so excited to meet you. And we were wondering, when are you going to come out? When are you going to come out? And you waited a long time in my belly. And then one day, and then I would tell him like an overview of the birth story, the water that you were living in, the balloon popped and it came out. And then you came out and we were so excited and so surprised. And it felt like it happened very fast. And it was a surprise, just to let him know, like, that's normal. And this is how you came into the world. And so then for him, we would say the same thing of like, we're not sure when she's going to come, buddy. If she comes at nighttime, here's what you can expect. Or if she comes while you're at school, Nana will come pick you up. Like, just reviewed some different like options for him and said, every time we know something, we'll let you know.
Hormone Harmony is an all-in-one hormonal balancing solution for women of all ages. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormone changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. Hormone Harmony is perfect for those horrible menopause symptoms that put your life on hold, like hot flashes and night sweats, racing thoughts and low moods, poor sleep and feeling tired all the time, occasional bloating and gas. Yeah, Hormone Harmony can help with all these things. And the biggest benefit? Feeling like yourself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews. And there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code VILLAGE at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code VILLAGE for 15% off today.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory, two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it?
We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
So join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom.
Get out of there, life gunk.
Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
Wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. Because sometimes life sucks.
Unsticking it. We took a similar approach with Nora. Yeah, so we had a plan for her of who was going to be taking care of her. And we talked to her about that so that she would know, like, hey, I'm going to work really hard to bring your brother into the world, just like I did when I was bringing you into the world. And I'm going to need dad's help. He's going to be helping me. And it was my friend Kaylee was going to be in charge of her. And so we told her, Kaylee will come over and play with you and spend time with you. And mommy and daddy are going to be working hard so that you can meet your baby brother. And that ended up not even being an issue because he was born when she was sleeping, but it gave her so much reassurance to know, like, here's what's going to happen. We don't know when, but we do know what and who are going to be here for you.
Yeah. And now in like this postpartum time, I guess we're forever postpartum. Now that we have two kids, I feel like it has, I anticipate the hardest for us hasn't come yet because right now she's not taking his toys. She's not in his space. I can set her down and go help him and not be like, oh shoot, is she going to crawl up the stairs? Is she going to run? And not that this is all like easy, but we were just chatting within our team the other day of like, oh, there's some folks who are like, oh yeah, the hardest was like once I had a crawler and a toddler or whatever, once they're moving and taking stuff. And I think there's different parts at different stages that are both hard and then are both beautiful. Like right now, the hard is that she needs my body, especially because this human will not take a bottle. And so no one else can feed her. She needs my body, which means I can't like be away from her for very long. And I can't go have like a little one-on-one date with him. And I can't, if for any length, not out of the house for any length of time, at least.
Right.
And so it's really for us just finding like, where can I get that time in? Like, I'll put her down for a nap and then be like, okay, bud, we've got about 30 minutes. What do you want to do? Speaking of our human who doesn't take a bottle, get in here, Beaners. Hi.
Hi. Oh my goodness. Also, when you're a linebacker, you need to eat a lot. Oh
my gosh. Yeah, that's the thing. I birthed a 4-month old. yeah, but I like that for us is the hard right now is just how physically demanding it is to have a young baby and how isolating it is when it's only me that can feed her. Now, the difference, I think, is the huge difference between first and second for me, he was my sensory sensitive kid. So he was the one that I was like in a dark room, bouncing on a ball to help get to sleep. And people would say like, one of my triggers is around like, didn't you create this? Like, do you think that she's just like this because she has to be? And I'm like, nope, you're hungry. I call her my basic
kind of talk, do you, Mila?
Yeah. No, this is just who I am. Here you go, Beans. But for him, if we were out in like a bright room or high, when we were like we didn't really go to restaurants because he would just cry.
Yeah.
And feel overwhelmed. He definitely wasn't gonna sleep. He was screaming in the car. He was whatever. It's how he was born. Like, he's still any it sort of totally sound.
Mm-hmm. I remember you texting me from a restaurant when he was like maybe 3 months old. And you were like, he's so fussy. I'm trying to nurse him and he won't nurse even though he's hungry because he won't stop looking around at all the noises happening around him. So I'm just here with my boob out and he's alternating between fussing and looking around, but not eating, which is what he needs right now. And I think that that is so classic for a sensory sensitive child who, when they're not able to filter out what's happening around them, sometimes they won't let us meet their needs because they're too overwhelmed.
Correct.
And it is how they're born. I remember my dad calling me when Abel was like maybe 10 days old and I was bouncing on a yoga ball with Abel in the carrier. And he was like, so what have you been up to today? And I'm like, well, I've been bouncing on this ball all day while Nora watches TV. And he's like, well, he's going to have to learn how to not be bounced on a yoga ball all day. And of course, my dad didn't mean anything by that. But it is that idea of like, you're creating this baby who needs to be bounced all day. Just teach him that you can't do that.
When you're already whelmed and like in your head, you're like, am I creating this? Even though you know I'm not. You're like, okay, yeah, should I just stop? And then you stop and you're like, nope, this is my nightmare. Nothing can happen.
Correct. It was like, yeah, let me try to teach him how to not need this. And then he would just scream his head off. And so, yeah, it is triggering when people are like, you're creating this. And it's like, no, this is their nervous system.
And then little misconnection, sorry, here, as she can like hear us chatting, just keeps stopping to nurse to smile at me.
She's like, I want to be part of this. I love talking about
this. Oh, are we hanging out? Are people hanging out without me?
And also, she was born that way, craving social connection.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And not tolerating.
Nope. Totally not needing a quiet room to sleep because she's totally comfortable in a room full of people talking. It's not draining her battery. She filters it out and goes to sleep.
Exactly. Exactly. And that for me, like, it's easier to have your first be sensory sensitive than it is to have your second or subsequent children
totally. Be I sensory mean, I sensitive. Think it's easier for you now, right? But correct. Like, when Mila is talking her head off to Sage all day long, and Sage is like, get me out of
here. Well, there will be parts of it that's going to be hard at any stage anyway, but I'm just saying, like, in that immediate, like, transition,
Sure.
Me not having to hide in a room like I did with him. Or even just, I mean, it was just us at home. And so we could control the sound and the environment and whatever in a way that 2 weeks after she was born, it was Christmas and he got a chainsaw and a weed whacker, right? And they were just like we were in the house with a toy chainsaw and weed whacker, and she was snoozing. And Zach and I were just like, what is this?
Yeah. I mean, Cody and I also were like, what is this? But just like the opposite. Like, you know, like Nora was just trying to have like a conversation with her parents, and Abel was like, I can't take this. And Cody and I were like, wow, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, and that will be it, right? Like, it for Sage will be the adjustment to adding sound from her. Even if we have people over for dinner, even if it's two people come join us for dinner, he's like, it's too loud in here. And so every time we add any additional noise, that's hard for his nervous system. So there's going to be hard times around that. And for us, it's letting him know it's right now a balance of accommodations, like headphones or things like that, and coping tools of if we know it's going to be a louder scenario or there's going to be additional noise, he has access to vestibular input, something to spin on, going upside down, etc., which is really what's regulating for him, or a space to go where he can have quiet time.
A key part of supporting both kids through adding to your family, both your newborn and your older child, is understanding how their nervous systems work. And we have a quiz, our sensory regulation quiz, and you can find it at seedquiz.com. It can really give you some insightful information about how your child's nervous system works and give you strategies for what can help recharge their battery so that they can cope with the inevitable things in life that will be stressors for them.
Yeah, and that's just it. Like, there will be stressors. And so it's, what are the coping tools for each kid individually? And it was definitely helpful for us to know that about him before she came. Because we already then had some things on hand of like, okay, we know that anytime a baby cries, it's going to feel too loud for him.
Right.
We were in North Carolina. It was my mom and I in the car. We were driving to my brother's house. And so we're already on vacation. His routine's off, yada, yada. We're in the car and she's screaming. It's an 8-minute drive. Mm-hmm. She screamed the full 8 minutes. He's sobbing, like sobbing. Make her stop. Mom, she needs to nurse. And I was like, buddy, I nursed her before we got in the car. She's safe. And he's like, she's not safe right now. And I was like, oh, I know she's crying. And it's so hard to hear someone that you love cry. And he was like, you need to pull over. You need to stop. And I think it's a combo of like, sure, it's hard to hear someone that you love cry, but also this is just really loud and my nervous system can't take it.
Totally. It's like Nora, for instance, who has a totally different nervous system, was almost never bothered by Abel's crying, would just try to talk over it. And even still, we were hanging out with friends a couple months ago, and one of my friends just had a baby, and I was holding the baby, and the baby was snoozing, and there was like kid chaos everywhere. And Nora comes up to me and goes, Mom, can Bridget hear? And I said, yeah, her hearing's fine. Why? And she goes, how is she sleeping through this? Because Nora's main experience of newborns are newborns that need to be in a dark, quiet space.
Or white noise blasting space, really.
Correct. Yes. A white noise dungeon. But yeah, it's so interesting to see how they cope with their siblings' needs based on their own nervous systems.
Mm-hmm. And that for me is like, also, what can my expectations be, right? Like, I can't expect him to just all of a sudden be okay with sound because it's coming from her.
Right.
And so for myself, I'm like, all right, if she's gonna make noise, spoiler alert, she is, she's human, then what is available for him and how do I prep him as much as possible for that? we do a lot of talking outside the moment about this, where I'll be like reading to him or playing with him, or, you know, we're in the car and she's not screaming. And I will just say to him, like, wow, you know what I noticed? Sometimes when Mila's talking or when she's crying, it feels really loud and it can feel overwhelming. If you're feeling like it's so loud and it's overwhelming, you can say like, Mama, I need a break. That's too loud. Or ask for your headphones, or you could take space in these. We like prep him for what he can do outside of the moment where he's in a space to store that. Another thing that we've been doing from the beginning that he just actually in the last 2 weeks started to really like hone the skill of is asking for attention, where he would do things that are often annoying, right? Like he's throwing something he knows he's not supposed to throw, or going up and like he had this blanket and he was spinning around with it near things that could get knocked down or break, whatever, that he knows he's not supposed to do, and he's doing it. And so I would say like, oh, buddy, I can't let you do that. So-and-so can get hurt, or this could happen. Are you looking for my attention? Would be my next, like immediately would stop him from what he was doing and then say, are you looking for my attention? Are you feeling left out? And we did that over and over and over. And then in the calm moments, we'd talk to him about how sometimes he has all of my attention. Sometimes he has some of my attention and Mila has some of my attention. And sometimes Mila has all of my attention. And that when he doesn't have all of my attention, if he's feeling left out or he wants my attention, he can say, Mama, I want your attention. And then we can figure out a plan. It doesn't mean I can stop what I'm doing, but that we can figure out a plan. And we've been, honestly, she's 3.5 months. We've been talking about it for about 3.5 months of like what to say. And now he started to do it. We just this weekend were FaceTiming with my parents, and then he wandered off and was playing, and I was still FaceTiming and I had Mila in my lap, and they were like, you know, looking at her or whatever. And he popped in and said, Mama, I would like your attention. And I was like, yes, it's like starting to like stick. And he did it 2 more times that weekend. And I would validate it first. Like, oh yeah, I'm paying attention to Mila and Grammy and Pa, and you wanted my attention. Okay, let's figure out a plan. And we're often figuring out a plan together is what's most helpful with him if he feels a part of it. So I would say, like, right now, Grammy and Pa want to say hi to Mila and you want my attention. What should we do?
Yeah.
And bring him into problem solver mode. And he said, like, can we set a timer and then we'll be all done with FaceTime? These are things that like we've scaffolded in the past, like where I've prepped him, like, here are some options. And so now he knows some things to pull from. And I was like, yeah, that's great. How long should we set the timer for? And these are things where like, I thought he'd be like 1 minute and he's like 6 minutes, right? So we get like even more time than I would have suggested if he's a part of the problem solving. But that language of wanting my attention, we just gave him really early. And again, it's been 3.5 months of him not doing it and us still saying it before we started to see him start to do it.
Totally. I mean, it's a long game for things like that. And we had kind of a similar situation with Nora when Abel was a newborn, where I was in that white noise dungeon all the time. And it was like us three home alone a lot. And so I would like set her up with a TV show. And inevitably, because she was 4 and she had needs, she would come into the room and like wake up Abel and I would start over. And so.
And then you're frustrated inside. You're like, oh my God, I just spent so much time getting him down.
Totally. I mean, I was so full of rage at my 4-year-old who was doing nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the guilt, right? It's this whole cascade of things. So outside of the moment.
Hang on. I have a thought process that happens in my head in those moments where I'm like, well, now you can't have my attention because you just woke up the baby. And if you would have just waited, like I could, just in case I'm not alone on that one. Like
totally.
All of a sudden it's her fault that she can't have my attention. Because she woke up the baby. Like that's the thought process that first comes into my head that I have to work real hard to have not come out of my mouth.
That still comes up for me when they're fighting. They're 4 and 9. And I'm like, yeah, if you wouldn't antagonize him constantly and I wasn't constantly breaking up your fights, I'd have more time to spend with you. Yeah. That's the first like bitter thought that comes out.
Same.
Which is really like a signal for me that I need to take some time to fill my own cup. But yeah, so we would have this pattern where I would be trying to get Abel to sleep. Nora would come in. whatever. So outside of the moment when I wasn't angry slash guilty slash blood boiling, sweating with a crying baby on my body, when I had Cody home and I could hand him Abel and talk to Nora for a few minutes, I said, like, honey, are you having a hard time being alone so much when I'm in the white noise dungeon, which is what we called it, with Abel? And she was like, yes, I'm lonely. Like, this is a kid who needs connection. And so there wasn't going to be a way for me. I just want this to be real for people who might be dealing with a baby who is hard to soothe. It wasn't going to be like, okay, yeah, I'm just going to set Abel down and play with you. And it wasn't even really connection time, but it was her feeling less lonely. I put my phone on silent. I downloaded a game for her. I bounced on a ball in the dark with Abel facing away from the light from my cell phone because any light would disturb him. But she got to be physically in the same space as us while I met his needs. And that conversation needed to happen outside of the moment for both of us. And I think so much of this work of figuring out how to be there for your kids emotionally and helping them build the skills to ask for what they need, it doesn't happen in the heat of the moment. It happens when we're both calm.
Yeah, which can be hard to find.
Yeah, it's like 30 seconds. You're like, all right, we've got 5 minutes before we have to start bedtime. Ready to chat?
5 minutes of calm we found today between the two of us. I also, like, Zach's a big person where he's like, I don't want to ruin the good times with the hard conversations. That's like how it feels for him. And I was like, that I get, where it's like, we're having such a nice time. I don't want to bring up this thing. It can feel hard to do that. I love that example because, yeah, the reality was you weren't going to be like, okay, yeah, I'll just set him down and come meet your needs. It was having to figure out, how can I meet your needs in this moment? And one thing I've had to, like, really just accept is that when I am meeting one of their needs and I can't meet the other one's needs at that moment, someone's probably crying. And right. That it's okay for that person to feel disappointed or frustrated or lonely. And it's not actually my goal that he never feels left out or that he never feels disappointed about this or he never feels frustrated. I want him to have tools to move through those feelings, and her too. Like, there are times where, yeah, she, just the other day, he's on the toilet, he had pooped, he needs somebody to wipe him, she needs to eat and go to sleep. And I had been nursing, I started nursing her, like, in the bathroom, sitting on a little fold up stool while he was pooping. And then he needed to be wiped. And I was like, I don't think I can nurse and wipe at the same time here. Especially a sensory sensitive child. Anyone who's wiped a sensory sensitive kid knows that experience. And I was like, okay, she's going to hate this. I'm going to go set her down. She's crying the whole time he's being wiped. And then he's crying. Why she's crying? Mama, she needs you. She needs you to nurse. And he doesn't want to be wiped. And, like, everybody's now crying, but he has a need that needs to be met before I can meet hers. And those moments can feel so chaotic. I have to, like, prep myself. Like, when I'm there and I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to go set her down, I'm like, give myself a pep talk of, everyone's probably going to lose their shit a little bit. And that's okay. We're going to move through this. They're going to have hard feelings. I'm going to have hard feelings. And we're going to move through this. But allowing that has been key for me. And it's those triggering emotions, right? Like, for me, the feeling left out is really triggering. And so when he feels lonely or left out, I want to make it go away yesterday, right? Like, I want it gone so fast. And I have to really check that of, it's also okay for him to feel left out.
Yeah.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
There's no scenario in which our kids don't feel those things sometimes. Mm-hmm. And they will continue to feel them. And the want to make it go away is so real in the moment. But I like to remind myself, and we talk about this a lot with the team, and you talk about it in the book, those moments are opportunities for growth, and they're opportunities to start to build skills, because right now they're feeling left out because our attention is pulled elsewhere. And later it's like they're feeling left out with a group of their peers and they're at school without us. And now what?
Yeah. What tools do they have? Do they feel like it's okay to feel that? Do they know what that feeling is?
Correct.
And what to do with it? Yeah. They get to practice at home. But I just have to remind myself of that, especially when you're like in the throes of it and you're dysregulated from it. Whew. Yeah, that one's a hard one for me to allow. And I have four siblings and I'm not super close with any of them. And so for me, one of the things that feels important is to try and cultivate a sibling relationship where they can have a closeness if they want that. And I feel like I'm doing it without having seen it, and my husband's an only child. And so I try to be mindful too of not being like, well, I need to meet her needs so I can't meet yours. And instead trying to say like, yeah, everyone has needs. And sometimes I have to meet my own, or sometimes I have to meet yours and she needs to wait. And everybody feels left out sometimes. When I popped into the room when he was playing with Zach yesterday or the other day, and she was clearly like, where are they? I said out loud, like, oh my goodness, she was fussing in there and she was looking around. I think she was feeling left out. She heard you playing and she was feeling left out. Now that we're in here and she can see you, she looks calm. So for him to see like everybody has needs and everybody feels these things. And I guess my fear is him being like, everything was fine. And then she came along, you know?
Totally. And I think like, it's so easy in the way that we approach those situations to accidentally kind of pit our kids against each other.
Yeah.
We had a situation recently where we were at like a school function and Abel was coloring. Nora had just played a basketball game where she had made her first basket. And lots of people were coming over and congratulating her, and she got nervous. So she picked up some markers and started coloring on Abel's paper. And he was already dysregulated by the noise and sounds that were going on during the basketball game. And he lost it and was like, she ruined it. I hate her, etc. And part of me was like, yeah, why did she feel the need to write on your paper? Like, she was getting all this great attention. Why did she need to bother him? And now I have to deal with it. You know, like those are the thoughts that come up. So
yeah,
you know, plus in public, you're under a microscope, Abel shouts that he hates Nora, like not my favorite scenario in front of all these other parents. So later on, I just was like, all right, we're surviving.
Like, I work for Seed if you want any resources here.
Yeah, honestly. And they know that I do. So then it's this added layer of pressure, right? Even though I'm always like, yeah, there's no perfection. Like, But then when it's
living out the no perfection is different than saying it out loud.
Oh, it's painful. So we exited. We got home. Later that night, I was talking to Abel before bed and I said, hey, bud, do you remember when Nora wrote on your paper and you got really mad at her? And he was like, yeah. I said, Nora was getting a lot of attention from grownups that she's not super comfortable with. She doesn't really know them. And I noticed that she was looking down at the ground and not really responding very much to them. And I think that she was nervous. And I'm wondering if she started coloring on your paper because she wasn't sure what else to do in that moment when she felt nervous. And he kind of just like absorbed that for a second. And he just kind of was like, okay, yeah, but she still wrote on my paper.
Sure.
I was like, totally. And I'm going to chat with her about that. But I wanted you to know that that's what was going on for Noni. And the next day while we were driving to school, Abel had a conversation with Nora about it. He brought it up to her. Sweet. And he ended up telling her that he was sorry for telling her that he hated her. I didn't ask him to do that. I just wanted him to know what was happening for her.
It fostered empathy.
Right. And it didn't happen that night, right? He just kind of looked at me and was like, but she still wrote on my paper.
I'm still pissed.
Like, great. I'm sorry she was nervous, but that was my drawing, right? But after he had a minute to process it, mm-hmm. then he felt empathy for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she subsequently was like, yeah, I'm sorry that I wrote on your paper. Sure. And I said, no, next time you're feeling nervous, you can put your hand on my leg or grab my hand. And because I was right there. I'm sure. Like, and I can help you when grownups that you don't really know are talking to you. Like, I'm happy to do that for you.
Yeah. I love it. It's such a rad example of, I think when we can help the siblings understand the why behind their siblings' behavior, rather than just seeing the behavior on the surface, it's a right. game changer. It requires us to slow down and see the why, right? That like you could only have that conversation because you slowed down to see beyond the behavior. That initial thought of like, yeah, what are you doing, Nones? Why are you coloring on this paper? That we have to get past that to see, oh yeah, she's feeling overwhelmed or nervous with all this attention that she's getting right now. She doesn't know what to do with that. And so she went to a safe space, which is to be in her little family bubble and express there. And that's so huge. Like you were able to slow down and ask yourself those questions of like, what's going on for her?
Which like full disclosure, I disassociated in public and just got us home. I 100%. Couldn't.
That's my move.
Right. I couldn't do it when I felt under the microscope. Right. So I almost like ignored both of my kids and was just like, all right, it's time to go. Because yep. I knew that anything else that came out in that moment wasn't what I wanted it to be.
Sure.
I was feeling embarrassed. I was sweating. Get me out of here.
Sure.
On the car ride home, turned up the music, pretty much ignored the kids, had a minute to think.
Uh-huh.
And then after the kids ate and moved their bodies at home, I thought like, okay, Abel might be open to a conversation right now.
Sure.
But I had to disassociate. I was totally like coping mechanism, not coping strategy.
Yeah.
Wasn't feeling calm, just needed to get out. So I want to just say like, that's okay to do.
Very much so. That's my move. This is the thing, like I'm not a big yeller. But I will disconnect and dissociate. It was so interesting because when we were on vacation recently, there was like a really hard day one day. Like every day had hard moments, but there was one day that was like, I need to just survive this. And of course, it was the day that Zach had to leave to do an overnight for work somewhere while we were on vacation. And I'm with my parents obviously. And the kids, obviously. And so like there wasn't even for me a he's going to be done with work and I'm going to get like, nope, I'm on through the night. It's of course the only night on vacation where Sage wakes up screaming an hour early because he had to go poop, which he never has to do. Right. All those things that only happen.
All the things.
Yeah. But there was one day that was so hard and he was just full, like his body was out of control and he's like flailing, throwing things and hitting. And my dad stepped in to like try and engage him and like go into distraction mode, which sometimes there's a time and a place for distraction. Can love it to help kids calm and then be able to go into processing. Sage just wasn't in a space to receive it. And he like yelled and maybe hit my dad or threw something. And then I watched afterwards the like disconnect, or what I at least perceived all my childhood as disconnect, as a, you need to come back feeling sorry before we'll reconnect, child to adult, right? And I watched this play out where like Sage went through stuff, through his emotion, and then got to a point of regulation. He ate food, spoiler alert, he was hungry always. That's almost always for Sage, the root is I'm hungry. So he ate food and then he was able to move through it. And I kept seeing him try to like reconnect, sitting up next to my dad or like asking my dad to come do a thing, and my dad just being kind of cold. And I was able to like for the first time ever see it from also the adult perspective of, I don't know if he knew what to do or how to reconnect in terms of like, I think he was trying to give us space so that I could just navigate this. And because I have sometimes snapped and been like, I've got this. And right. I think that from his perspective, that's what he was trying to do. But I saw it from my like tiny human perspective of the like, oh, he has disconnected and dissociated and the child is trying to reconnect and can't get in. And that's my go-to. I will disconnect. I'll dissociate. So I'm not yelling. I'm there, but I'm not really there.
Right.
And you can feel that, right? Like I will be like cold or whatever. Like Sage will come up and try to reconnect. And inside, I'm still annoyed at you. I don't want to reconnect with you. Yeah. I want you to come up and say, I'm so sorry I did that, Mom. Right. Here's what was going on for me. And then I'll reconnect. And I have to work really hard on that because it is for me, like your dissociation and then going into the car to self-regulate so that you can initiate reconnection is what is always a work in progress for me, because I can dissociate and stay in a space where I want the kid to regulate to then come help me regulate. Mm. And I have to be super mindful of that. But dissociation and disconnection, boy, are those my go-tos. And to see it play out with my dad, I was like, oh yeah, apple doesn't fall far from the tree. This was what was modeled.
Sure. I also have that more so. It's like an age bias for me. So I expected a lot from my oldest, where I'm like, no, you need to come and like tell me that you're sorry and acknowledge what just happened before I'm going to give you my time and connection. You know, it's this like conditional, it's this conditional thing. And it's also something that I experienced as a child. My parents, I don't think, had other tools and were kind of like, okay, well, what am I supposed to do with this kid who's being disrespectful? Like, why would I try to reconnect with them? Right. Correct. Like now we have the brain science to understand why this happens. But that knee jerk reaction of like, yeah, no, I don't want to reconnect with you. Like, get out of here. Beat it.
Beat it.
That totally comes up for me.
Yeah, same. Same. But I think from like the general public, sometimes it can present as I'm calm.
Oh, I'm yeah.
Like, nobody I'm not would've... calm.
I looked cool as a cucumber at that basketball game. And inside I was like, I hate this. And why do you guys have to do this in front of people? I hate it. But yeah, from the outside, I just looked like a mom who was taking her kids home for supper.
Yeah. You know? They're having a hard time and I'm fine with it.
I am fine. I've got everything together. We're going to go home and have a great family dinner.
So real. Oh man. Oh, I am so jazzed that I get to hang out with you. A fun, exciting announcement with this episode is that Rach and I are going to be doing this, just hanging out and debriefing the episodes for every episode going forward. So you'll listen to the expert interview. And then after that, you get to hear Rach and I talk about like, what does this look like in real time? What does it look like when you apply this and dive into, I would say, the reality of it, not just the expert piece, but the reality piece too. And we have kids spanning right now. You have 9, 4, Or five. I'm gonna call him five. He's not, I'm sorry.
I mean, he's gonna be
he's
five by the time this airs.
Nine, 5, 3, and a baby. So spanning some age groups here. And just to get to dive in, I hope that folks who are in that transition of adding a sibling, going from 1 to 2, can give themselves grace and time and know that every season is a different season. And so if this one feels hard right now, it's going to shift. Every season's a different season. And kids continue to build skills and we continue to build skills, and, you know, babies are going to change so fast that the hard of it will shift into different seasons.
Yeah, I love that.
Thanks, Rach.
Hey, thanks for having me. We're going to be doing a lot more of this.
I love it.
Thanks for tuning in to Voices of Your Village. Check out the transcript at voicesofyourvillage.com. Did you know that we have a special community over on Instagram hanging out every day with more free content? Come join us at seed.and.so, S-E-W. Take a screenshot of you tuning in, share it on the gram, and tag seed.and.so to let me know your key takeaway. If you're digging this podcast, make sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We love collaborating with you to raise emotionally intelligent humans.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests, too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.